State versus Thieland. Mr. Easland, good morning again.
Good morning.
You may proceed again.
All right. Good morning, Justices. My name is Brad Easland, and I again represent John Thieland, who in this case is a defendant in a criminal matter, and we are the appellant in this case. So again, this is a situation that involves an electric fence, and Cedar County has filed a criminal three counts against him on three different days for violating a statute. So one of the major issues in this is has to do with definitions that are contained in the statutes. So one thing I would note right off the bat is that if you read the charging document that Cedar County filed in this case, it states under...
You mean the state of Nebraska.
State of Nebraska. It states count one is obstructing roadway. Count two is obstructing roadway. Count three is obstructing roadway. So when you go, and the violation is 39-301, which is an old statute. It has a lot of arcane language in it.
Are you referring to the title of the document, or are you talking about the actual language of the charge within the body?
Yeah, I'm just talking about the caption in the document.
So what does the actual body say with respect to road versus roadway?
I believe it kind of mirrors the statute and says public road.
So don't we look to what the body says rather than the caption?
Well, yes. But the issue here is that the term public road is not defined, because 39-301 says you cannot obstruct a public road. So then when you go to the definition sections of this statute, there is no definition for public road.
You're not arguing that typically the graveled or the actual traveled portion of along the center of the right-of-way, typically, that can be obstructed.
Correct.
So your argument is that it just doesn't extend to the ditch or on beyond to the full width of the 66-foot right-of-way.
That's correct. Yes. You can't, the traveled portion of the road cannot be obstructed, and that makes sense.
So people can put a fence right along the edge of the traveled surface? The adjoining landowner can do that under your interpretation?
Perhaps. That's not the facts that we have in the situation in front of us, but...
Isn't that the inevitable logic of what you're asking us to say? Because it is a fence, however flimsy a fence it may be, it's in the road ditch, right?
Correct.
So if that's not an obstruction, what's the logical impediment to a five-wire barbed wire fence right down the side of the traveled surface?
I guess it's possible that could be an interpretation, but that is not the facts that we have in front of us at this time.
So what are you arguing are the boundaries of a public road then?
Well, under the statute, in the definition section, there's a definition for highway, there's a definition for roadway. And the definition for roadway says that the traveled portion exclusive of berm and shoulder, that might not be the exact words, but something along those lines. And so our position is that is the definition that most aligns with what is in 39-301 when it talks about a public road, that we don't want this public road obstructed.
One of the things that 39-301 prohibits is allowing water to accumulate on the roadway or traveled surface of the road, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Why would it specify that if the entire statute only applies to the traveled surface of the road? What purpose is that language serving?
Well, I would speculate that the purpose of that language is so that, you know, there isn't, somebody doesn't try to divert water to come across the road because it damages the road, because then people can't drive down the road.
Right, but your position is that this statute only applies to the traveled portion of the road. So why do they, if it's that narrow, why is there additional language specifying that the water portion is also narrow?
I guess I don't know the answer, other than the legislature put it in there many years ago, because, I mean, that statute is fairly arcane. It talks about not placing a hedge on the road.
There's also certain exceptions that say if you do certain things in the right-of-way, that's not prohibited. Do you have a response for why that would be included if the statute only applied to the traveled portion of the road?
I don't know, other than that's what it says and that's what the legislature had placed in there. We have to go by what the words say, and public road is not defined, and therefore we have to go to the definitions, and there's one for roadway, travel portion, there's one for highway, which could be interpreted as the entire length between the 66 feet, if you will.
Before your time runs out, do you want to talk about the other assignment of error regarding insufficiency of evidence?
Yes. So we did there wasn't live testimony in this record because we just submitted it all as affidavits and so on. But they're saying that John Thielen is the one that placed this fence in the ditch. But there is no evidence to do so. There's no evidence to say that that a witness has said they saw him placing it there.
No direct evidence.
No direct evidence.
Is circumstantial evidence enough?
Well, yes, circumstantial evidence is enough. But under the standard of review, because this was a bench trial, the court does not, you know, basically retry it. But there still has to be evidence, enough evidence there to justify the conviction. And our position would be there's no witness that saw him place it. There's no admission of him placing it. The only thing is that it was there, and he lives there, and it was along his land, so it must have been him. And our position is that the only way it could be...
Is it fair to ask the question, who else would have done this?
Yes, but... And you could ask that question, well, it just had to have been him because he's the one that lives there.
Who went to claim the fencing?
Pardon?
Did someone go and claim the fencing or ask to have the fencing returned, and who was that?
Yes, my client did. Later went down to either the sheriff's office or talked to the county attorney and said, I'm here because this fence was taken, but he in the affidavit, he submitted an affidavit, but I did not say it was my fence. And so I understand that could be used as part of the circumstantial evidence case, and probably the county judge, Judge Luby, considered that. But still, there has to be enough circumstantial evidence to prove it, and there's just not in this case. And I reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lewis, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Matt Lewis, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the state of Nebraska. This is a direct appeal of appellant's three convictions of obstructing a public road, a violation of Section 39301, after a bench trial in Cedar County Court, a decision that was affirmed on appeal by the District Court of Cedar County. Mr. Thielen essentially argues that the evidence is insufficient to support his conviction of those misdemeanors. I'll first address the assignment regarding the applicability of Section 39301. Moving right to the contention that the public road is not defined in the statute and that it is not simultaneously a public highway or a highway, as the county court found Section 39101, the definitional section, separately defines roadway and identifies it as the lane of travel, which makes it seemingly separate from the larger road sort of construct, suggesting that the road itself is a sum of its parts rather than just the lane of travel by itself. Further on in Chapter 39 and 1410, sub 2, there is a definition that says public roads shall mean all roads within the state which have been laid out by any law of the state. And then there are other definitional provisions of what a highway is underneath the definitional statute of Chapter 39, which allows for something that is which is quite broad. And it states that a highway means the entire width between the boundary limits of any street, road, avenue, boulevard, or way, which is publicly maintained when any part thereof is open to public use for the purposes of vehicular travel. There's also a separate definitional statute, or a separate definitional inclusion in that for the shoulder, which means the part of the highway contiguous to the roadway and designed for the accommodation of stopped vehicles for emergency use and the lateral support of the base and surface courses of the roadway. So the definitional statute of Chapter 39 makes a point to parse out the individual parts that would make up a highway, that would make up the sort of larger road network and construct.
I beg your pardon. So you're looking at all those statutes to help us understand the expression public road?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So what definition do we choose, and what is the rule or basis that we should choose one definition over the other?
Well, I think that the statutes seem to indicate that the road, the public road, the road system is the entire boundary to boundary 66-foot lane of travel plus the shoulder support systems that can be used in applying 39301 and to understand what a violation of 39301 could be.
So again, when you said roadway, what did you believe roadway meant under the statute?
Well, roadway is defined within the statute as the lane of travel for the purposes of vehicular travel.
Okay, so then therefore, here's a question with respect back to 39301, mm-hmm. which is at issue. There's a phrase in there about all these things you can't do, and then it says, or by allowing water to accumulate on the roadway, which you have informed us you believe to be traveled portion by virtue of the definition, right? Allowing water to accumulate on the roadway or traveled surface. Is this a hiccup? Is this just a repetition? Is this a different thing? Is roadway different than traveled surface?
I don't think it's necessarily different. I think it's sort of within the road there might be portions that might be traveled that aren't specifically the common roadway that is typically intended for use. I think there was an example brought up in earlier about a wide piece of farm equipment or something to that nature, or if there's there's somebody that's broken down in the middle of the roadway or some sort of obstacle or something like that, you might need to drive around it.
So then roadway and traveled surface are different things?
They could be, yes, and
I see.
As provided here. But the roadway is the lane of travel, the typical lane of travel, the lane of travel as we would normally sort of understand it to be is clearly defined by 101 in Chapter 39.
Okay, so you can't do water on a roadway or this other thing we're going to call traveled surface.
Correct.
Okay.
Could the traveled surface simply include the shoulder?
I believe it could, yes.
The traveled surface is not defined anywhere.
No, not necessarily.
So which definition do you want us to adopt?
The broader, wider definition that is congruous with the highway as it is defined in Chapter 39, which includes the lane of travel plus the sort of support systems that exist on the side of the road that allow the...
Like the ditch.
The ditch, the shoulder, however
all 66.
All 66 feet.
That's what you're
feet
urging.
Off the center
okay, thank you.
We've all asked this before, but how do we get there? This court were to write an opinion favorable to you, how do we say the broader definition of the road is the right definition?
Well, I think that if you were to essentially say that, you know, a public road equals highway equals, you know, these parts come together, become, you know, sort of road, that would clarify the situation to the point where it would sort of remedy this problem.
Does the rule of lenity have any impact here? I mean, is an average person going to be able to read these statutes and reasonably understand public road to mean the full 66 feet?
I will concede that it is sort of confusing as it is right now because there are so many different definitions of so many different, you know, pieces of road that it sort of becomes a little murky about what it is we're exactly talking about. I think if you wanted to you know, be lenient with somebody that is, for example, violating, you know, 39301, you know, one violation or something along those lines, you know, would be, you know, fine. But you know, this is multiple violations over the course of time.
And this Do you think the common public in Cedar County finds this at all confusing?
I mean, we're here right now, so somebody does.
Did the appellant go and make a request to the county commissioners to allow him to put this fence up?
There is some support in the record that shows that he had talked to somebody on the county board, had received either some sort of informal permission or something like that, or at least that's what he asserts.
So so there's evidence in the record that he knew it was an issue.
Right, and that he had gone to the board after the fact, after, you know, starting to, I think after amassing some of these, you know, citations or and also some warning letters, too, saying not to do it, where he sought approval to continue doing this and was denied by the board. So this was quite out in the open that he knew that he wasn't supposed to be doing this.
And he took no action to attempt to allow him to do this ahead of time other than just making the request, being denied, and then doing it anyway.
As far as I understand it, yes. He has sort of a colloquy with the sheriff's officer that's there to document the encounter and then also, you know, police up the fencing equipment and says, you know, well, I was allowed to do this before and you know, I'm seeking approval to do this again, but, you know, nothing beyond that, more formal.
Counsel, if we were to define, to judicially construe public roads very narrowly, do you think it would have an impact on our DUI jurisprudence?
Potentially, and I looked into some of the DUI cases that, you know, sort of deal with, you know, police officer finds somebody stuck in the side of a ditch, you know, obviously, you know, maybe slurring their speech a little bit. A lot of that case law dealt more with, as far as I can tell, how they got to be in the ditch. Did they access the sort of, you know, not to muddy up terms even more, but the commonly accepted roadway lane of travel, and that is what they used to end up in the ditch at some point. And I think most of the case law has, you know, turned on that sort of analysis, but then also whether or not that road is open to public access. So I don't think it would create too much of a problem in that the ditch is still sort of open to public access sort of portion of the road, or how they got to, you know, come to rest in the ditch while drunk and their car disabled or something like that. They had to use the public road in order to get to that position in the ditch. So I don't think that there would be too worrisome of a conflict, but I don't want to color too far outside the lines. If there are no further questions on the public road portion of this, I'd just like to quickly address the identification portion and the sufficiency part. Mr. Thielen also takes issue with whatever evidence was presented to identify him as the owner and party responsible for the erecting of the fence. He argues that there was no evidence presented that he owned or erected the fence. However, the state produced a significant amount of evidence and facts that linked Mr. Thielen to the seized fencing material. Several affidavits from law enforcement officials, including the county sheriff's officers, documenting the placement of the fences, where they are, documenting actually talking to Mr. Thielen themselves, who comes out and expresses some displeasure that this is going on, says that he had no problem doing this before and that he's pursuing action. Yet when the sheriff's officer tries to hand him a receipt for the seized fencing material, he pretty much says, it's not mine. Later on, he ends up coming into the county attorney's office trying to recover the seized fencing, but then also denies that it's his, but says that he's only really coming out to try and get the fencing. So that, you know, because his name was on the receipt alone. In his defense, he only supplies a sworn affidavit stating that he was trying to pick up the fencing for that reason, but still tries to maintain that the fencing materials were not him, not his. While largely circumstantial, circumstantial evidence can establish guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. The state submits that the evidence presented by the state in this case was sufficient to support his conviction for these offenses and asks you to affirm. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 1 minute and 27 seconds.
1 minute and 27 seconds, Mr. Eastland.
Thank you. Well, one thing I would note is in my research, I didn't ever find a case that this court has ever addressed 39-301 or appeal involving that case. So we're making history today. So, but as far as some of the things that were talked about, the legislature wrote what they wrote, and they didn't define public road. So therefore, we're in front of this court, and our position is that roadway, the definition of roadway in the definition section is the one that most closely aligns with what is being talked about in 39-301. And therefore, that's the definition that this court should use. And if you use that definition, putting a single-strand electric fence in the ditch does not violate the statute. And therefore, his conviction should be overturned. And so that is what we are asking for in this case, and that's what we are asking this court to do. And that's all I have.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next case of the day, then, is First State Bank Nebraska versus Next Level LLC. Justice Miller-Lerman and Justice Stacy are both recused from this matter.